Okay, so hello and welcome back to the Dentistry Online podcast. Today I'm with Amit Patel, a specialist in periodontics and director at Birmingham Dental Specialists. So how have the last few months been for you?
Hi, Gabby. Well, the whole lockdown thing was for me a well-earned rest, really. For years, I've sort of been burning the candle at both ends. I didn't realise how much of an impact that's had. But I've really enjoyed it. I really properly enjoyed just doing nothing. I didn't watch any lectures on the internet on teeth or anything like that. I just switched off.
And so it was complete break from dentistry then, really.
Yeah. I gave the odd webinar for a few people. Then I was asked to do some more and I just said, look, it's not for me. I really wanted to just not think about it. And then that was it.
What were you doing instead? I know you...
All right, okay. Yeah. So I'm a really big fan of desserts.
Okay.
So I decided... And there was this really amazing cake forum that these dentists set up, a guy called Deepak Palmer. And it was just the best, to be honest, in my opinion, the best dentist forum because there was no negativity or anything like that, which seems to be very much the vogue in the profession in my mind. But this is so good. So literally, they were making these amazing cakes. And then I thought, right, I'm going to have to start. And they were so helpful. And I've never baked cakes, you know. This is something that I've never thought about doing. I enjoy eating them, but definitely don't do them. But it would like take me just to like make a Victoria sponge. It would take someone maybe 30 minutes to prepare it or even less. It would take me like an hour and a half because I'm disorganized and not prepared, but it was good fun. I really enjoyed it. I made a Portuguese custard tart. They were just delicious. Yeah. And the thing with that is I didn't realize you could buy pastry. So I made the pastry but it was all fun.
Yeah.
And I made some chocolate brownies, which are really disgusting.
So you enjoyed the process of making it, but I mean, were you getting good feedback? Was it taste, were things, did you get there in the end? Were things starting to taste
good? Well, I gave myself good feedback.
That's all that matters.
Yes, exactly. But actually, funny, well, and one day I made a lemon drizzle cake for a patient of mine. And again, I got this from the forum. And I was making it for a friend. And a patient had asked me to come in. They had toothache. And I thought, right, let me just extract the tooth. And he saw this lemon drizzle cake. And he says, that lemon drizzle cake? I said, yes. He says, do you mind if I have some? I said, yeah, of course you can. So I gave it to him and it was very sweet. I think because I didn't charge him for the extraction, he's a nice guy, he's kind of bothered. He might have been saying, oh, this is the best lemon drizzle cake he's ever tasted. Thinking, you're just saying
that. It's still an ego boost though, isn't it? You know, it doesn't matter.
You did make my day though. You really did make my day. But I've managed to put a stone of weight on, which is not because I'm pushing 48 now, so I need to start doing exercise. I'm not very good. I hate exercise. I'm not a fan. So I did start to learn to skip during lockdown.
That's a good one.
Yeah, so I was skipping for about 40 minutes a day sort of thing, but it still didn't lose any weight. I just still enjoyed eating.
Yeah, your lemon drizzle cake.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's good. And I think, I mean, lockdown is how you make it, right? And I think whatever you do, whatever people did during that time is completely okay. It's just about getting through and coming to the other end, which hopefully we are now. I mean, going back to dentistry, how did you and your team sort of adjust to the circumstances?
Okay, so essentially we were told we could go back to work on the 8th of June or something. And I was never planning to go back to work in June. I was having too much of a good time. And my plan was to start the first week of July. So what I did was to just set a few things into place. And then, I mean, there's only two members of the staff. I've got receptionist, Andrea. I've got my nurse, Chloe, and they're amazing. But end of the day, you know, no matter what my thoughts were about going back to work, I had to... be sympathetic towards their feelings, really, because, you know, I mean, if you look at the news, it was all doom and gloom and everything is, you know, this and the other. And I stopped watching the news, you know, early on in the lockdown, but and I thought to myself, right, so we opened that first week and we saw maybe, I don't know, three patients, right? And it was just, I let them book the patients in and make them feel comfortable. And before we started, I showed them these, you know, quite a few of the lectures that are out there based on what's been happening in Germany and other countries and Korea. And then they were much more reassured about the stuff that we were implementing within the practice. So we were, you know, I know there's not much evidence, but we were just getting anti-fogging devices and having, talking about fallow time. And, yeah, and I explained to them, you know, the stuff that we already do within the profession itself is already super safe, but I wanted them to be confident. And as a consequence, within a couple of weeks, we started to get back to a little bit of normality, and they seem much more laid back about stuff. So that was the most important thing. And then the next step was to then reassure the patients, I think. Staff first, and then if you got them on board, they were obviously going to do their best to reassure the patients. And our patients have been really cool.
Oh, cool. I know that's been a challenge for some people, is particularly with things like, you know, the news and the media and things that go around about dentistry and just healthcare settings in general. I think a lot of people can get sort of quite worried about COVID and if it's, you know, if they're going to be safe coming in. But it's good to hear that your patients were sort of understanding of the situation.
Yeah, and do you know what's been really, really interesting about this thing? It's like, you know, we all think about ourselves, and what's been happening to me is I've been listening to my patients' woes, and it, you know, it's, I'm not saying I'm trying to be their therapist or whatever, but it's, you know, it's like I've got a mental health nurse who came in, and she was completely worried about, I've done a lot of implant work on her, right? And she came and she's worried about them. And then when you start asking her the question, essentially, it's because what's been happening at work, right? And she says, you know, we're in a position where, you know, she's thinking to herself, has she sent the right patient home, or will they be alive the next day, or should she have sectioned them? And she says she goes home crying every day. And I'm thinking, I was gutted when I heard her say that, right? And then another patient who was, you know, saying, and this is all within the first week, they were all just venting. It's obvious they hadn't had a chance to speak to anybody independently. Yeah. And, you know, another guy said, oh, you know, I had a great job. And then he was completely screwed. And I was just, and the thing with me is I'm not a typical dentist. I sort of carry a lot of my patients' woes and burdens on my shoulder, I think, you know what I mean? And I worry about them, which is probably not healthy. But that's my nature. I worry about a lot of people, really. But I suppose that's why my patients may be like me or whatever, I don't know. But it has made me think, you know, I mean, we're all in the same boat, but we're all, and especially when you go on the forums, it's like, oh, you know, it's all, you know, this is all bad and whatever. Mm. But I think we're all in the same boat, really.
Yeah.
We've just got to put it into perspective a little bit, I think, you know.
Yeah, completely, completely.
I mean, I have a specialist referral practice here in Birmingham. And the day we went into lockdown, I knew we were never going to get any referrals, right? But, and you know, I started this business 6-7 years ago, and I started from a squat. So my mindset was, right, it just means I have to start again, you know, and I have to, you know, work harder to get it where I needed to, you know, and we were doing quite well. That's the way it is. And the way that, and you know, Birmingham is very NHS orientated. So, you know, we may not get any referrals in because they see less and less patients. So my plan is I write 2020 off and focus on next year, you know, and, you know, see how it goes. Because our patients only come through from dentists, never from directly through the internet or to us. We maybe get maybe 2 or 3 patients a year through the internet.
Okay. So you're just sort of taking it day by day, and for you, you're just sort of acknowledging this is, I mean, for a lot of people, I think we're all just kind of like, you know, let's just get this shit out of the way now.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, I think that's a healthy way to look at it. And going back to what you said about having this sort of relationship with patients where you talk about things, and I think you're completely right. And I think dentists are really well placed to have these conversations with people, because, you know,
I mean, it's not like a hairdresser where you find about people's affairs and stuff.
Exactly.
But we don't hear that, you know, and I don't want to know that. But I hear some really unpleasant stuff.
I think perhaps when it comes to sort of healthcare, if you know, you said there's a mental health nurse and things like that, is because you're in kind of similar areas of work, they maybe think there's you can relate to it to some extent.
Yeah.
I think that might be it.
And the thing with me was I was desperate to try to help her out, and I didn't know how to help her. I said, and what was interesting is she said to me, I said to her, I said, is there any way within the hospital that you work in that they can help you? She says, no. And that's the most surprising thing. So she takes this home with her, you know, and all this shit about, you know, them helping everybody is just rubbish. You know, when you think you've got to help your team, and they can then help us, you know, the patients who want to see them, which is, I was proper gutted listening to
them. Yeah, I mean, the job's hard at the best of times, let alone during a global pandemic. I can't even, hats off, you know, you take it for granted, I think, that there's people like this in the world sometimes. But then when you sit down and have these conversations with them, it kind of hits it hard, I think. So, I can completely see what you mean. I mean, so I know you're a specialist in periodontics. Where did this start from? How is this a sort of, how did interest grow?
Complicated story. So I mean, I'm from London, and I think most people know this, but I would have left school at 16. I didn't. I hate studying. I still don't enjoy it, you know. But I would have left school at 16. But my mates went and did their A level, so I just tagged along, and then I'm sort of good with my hands, and they sort of went, teacher said, do dentistry. And I went, all right then. So I didn't have any interest in it. You know, I didn't even really hang out with dentists or to watch what they were doing. I just went, and the thing is, again, I'm not good at studying. So I failed my A-level because I didn't know what I was doing. And then I resat. And then the only place that offered me a place at university was Liverpool University. And they said, we assume you've got no offers. And I'm like, yes, you're right. And they said, so you would like an offer? I said, yes, please. And that was it. So I went there, and actually, being from London, I wanted to be in London, but actually made me a better person because I understood what was outside of the country, you know, outside of London. And it's made me more independent compared to some of my friends that I went to school with. And then when I started dental school, the first term, I realized this is not for me. I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. So I was trying to find an alternative, but I committed myself to the degree, so I did it.
Nice one.
And then in year four, I met some maxillofacial surgeons, you know, they're head and neck cancer surgeons, and they were doing all this really cool stuff, head and neck dissections and all this stuff. And I was like, what are we doing here? And they're saying, we're dentists and doctors. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. Yeah. And they were so good at that hospital because they knew I was enthusiastic. They used to get me in and as a fourth year and fix fractures and all this stuff. So I just was, you know, they taught me how to do surgical knots, you know, hand tie knots and all this sort of stuff. And then I knew this is what I was going to do. So I then got my degree. I did my MFDS. And then decided to do 1 year in practice, which they used to call vocational training. So I did that just so I can make an informed decision if I liked it. And I realized it still wasn't for me. And then I applied to do medicine. So I got into a medical school in Leeds. I got into a 3-year course. And so I did that. But while I was in my VT, I met a specialist in Manchester, somebody called Phil Green. And he was, it was part of our VT training. We were supposed to watch this, what specialists do. And back then the specialist list just came in into fruition, really. And he was so enthusiastic and he loved, you know, treating his patients. And he was and I realized after that was I just need to be around people who are enthusiastic, right? And I will then want to do that, really. So then he took me out for dinner with his colleague who was an endodontist, and I said, look, I'm really not sure which one to choose. And literally Phil said to me, are you good with the scalpel? I said, yeah. Right, he says, then do perio. So then that was the only reason. Wow. Right, so I deferred medicine for 1 year. Uh-huh. Applied and got into Guy's. My interview was terrible. Right, so bad, because yet again, just like dentistry, well, why do you want to do dentistry? I don't know. Right? Why do you want to do periodontics? I don't know. I've just been told I should do it, right?
That's what you said. So when they sat you down and they asked you that question, you said, I've just been told.
Well, I'd like, I think the thing is I wanted to do that, but I wasn't because I knew I wouldn't have got it. But what happened was my CV was so medicine orientated, and they just completely destroyed me. They said, you obviously should be a Max Fax agent. I couldn't tell them, I've actually got a place in medical school, right? And I'm thinking about still doing that. And they just destroyed me. But then they, and the best bit was this, so they sort of said, well, we're going to have to give you a place at you because you're the only British candidate. So it was like, yeah. So I know now if I was to apply, I would never get a place because everybody seems to want to be a specialist, yeah. And that's fine, which I don't think is the way forward, to be honest. And I always have said to people, you know, really, you should be a good general dentist and have an interest in something. So you could have an interest in implants and you'll do really well. And the reason why I say that is once I finished my perio training, I obviously didn't do medicine. I stopped that after a year because in my perio training, I met an amazing Harley Street periodontist called Alan Siddy. And I told him about medicine. I had to have a private conversation. I said, really, I'm thinking about going back to do that. And he sort of said, come and watch me in my practice. And I saw him do the coolest stuff. And it was very much, you know, very surgically orientated, reconstruction of the jaw and all this sort of stuff. And I thought, right, yeah, this would be good enough. And he is a mentor and he motivated me and stuff like that. So, I owe him a lot.
It was people who sort of shaped your journey towards that then. It was rather than your interest, it was the enthusiasm and sort of the mentoring of others around you. Yeah.
Completely. And this is, you know, and I know there's a lot of young dentists, when you ask them a question, you know, they say who's their idol, and they might say Elon Musk or something like that, and I think that's a pile of rubbish, really, you know, because it's not real, you know. And you know, and for me, you know, I didn't have those high aspirations. It was like whoever I was with, you know, I would have, and if I enjoyed their company and their enthusiasm, I would have done that, and I would have done okay.
Yeah,
you know. And it's like when I was 16, I would have joined the army because that would have been fun, you know what I mean? But I didn't do that, you know, because, but now, and now when you think about it, because I used to teach at the university here in Birmingham, and the undergraduates sort of say, oh yeah, you've got to be an A-star student. And I'm like, really? The grades I got were shocking, right? I mean, really shocking. My GCSEs, and I'm going to say this, don't care, it's on the internet, I got 2 Bs, 5 Cs, 1 E, 1 N, and N is near miss, right? And then I did my A levels, I failed them badly, and then I got 3, and that was a C, E, N. And then I reset and I got 3 Bs. Now, the thing is, everybody's so, it's so much harder now, isn't it? So you almost have to know what you're doing at such a young age. So I have been lucky, but these students have thought I was an A grade student, and I never was. But it's only because I love my job, and what makes it really good is my patients, because, you know, they show me the results, right? If I give them the right information and they feed off my enthusiasm in the consultation, then the results are going to work, right? So I really love that. And so people, I think people's perception of me is wrong just because they think I'm, you know, I'm supposedly smart. I've never been smart. I've just sort of been very lucky. And, you know, and to be honest, people have, you know, asked me, you know, if you had a plan. I think if I had a plan, I would have been like, you know, really, really successful. But now I'm just like, you know, it's not an average practice in the UK.
I mean, I know on your presence, you've got quite a low social media presence. It's not really something that you've sort of embraced as an individual, which these days, as you're fully aware, you know, there's a massive social media presence of dentists, dental students, hygienists, therapists, and I think that can kind of feed into what you're saying sometimes, and that people, you know, you only put out a lot of the time what you want people to see, and people then forget that actually it can take, you know, people try and apply to dental school, you know, 3-4 times, it takes them a while. And like you just said, you don't have to get these top grades to do well, and you don't need to be a specialist to succeed as a dentist. So, like, I mean, why do you sort of keep yourself, why do you have this low key profile? Is this?
I think maybe because I'm old fashioned, I think maybe. I just think, you know, I'm a professional and I really feel I want to keep, you know, that side the way it should be. Yeah. but I understand things have changed, and you know, I have joined Facebook, and you know, even if you look at my Facebook profile, it's very much about what I've done and stuff, but I don't post much, but I'll always give positive comments about people who, you know, done some great work. If they've done terrible work, I'm not gonna be negative. You know, that's your decision if you're gonna put it, right? But, and I think this is what I find quite upsetting, is everybody will go out for the kill, and these same people who go out for the kill don't even show their cases. So it's like, your opinion doesn't count for me. But I'd rather try to be positive for people to know, you know, that they, you know, their work is good or not, you know. And sometimes I have had to privately message some people when they've been completely destroyed on Facebook and just say, look, you know, maybe if you did it this way, and they've sort of, you know, come back, say, you know, thanks for the feedback, you know what I mean? But there has to be a different way, you know. It's almost like being at school in my mind, you know. We're all competing with each other, and in reality, you compete with yourself. You know, I am an average periodontist in the United Kingdom. You know, I hope one day I'll be better, right? Maybe good, but I don't think I'm the best, you know. And I still go on courses all over the world, you know, because I know who I think I want to be like, you know. And so, but yeah, going back to social media, you know, I know it has a role, and Instagram now is something I don't completely understand. I don't know how you use it, but I gather the public seem to, you know, follow dentists and stuff. So I think, in my honest opinion, I think there has to be a happy medium. Right now, it's very much skew, right? And I think that will change, because the newer, younger dentists and hygienists and therapists that are coming out are much more humble in the way they talk about their work and stuff. So I think it will change, because there is a way of using social media. But I think right now, it makes me, with certain cases, makes me quite uncomfortable. But, you know,
it's a completely valid reason to be a little bit sort of not apprehensive, but just sort of to sort of back, take a step back and not be as present online. You know, like you said, it's completely up to the individual. But I think not just in dentistry, but in general, social media definitely is it has its negatives and it has its positives. And if it's used in the right way, it's a brilliant tool. But it's not even necessarily that the bad sides of it are intentional. It's just, you know, like going back to what we were talking about previously, it's, you put out there your successes and it's great to celebrate successes. But then there's also the flip side of that, that it can then have an impact on other people, you know. And it's I'm guilty of it, you know. It's unfortunately the nature of what it is. But I understand exactly what you mean.
And the thing is also, because then you sort of hear that some of these people who put their name out, you know, get completely slaughtered, and then I think, you know, what is your mental health like, you know, and are you mentally strong enough to do that? Now, I'll tell you the truth. I could put my name out, and I would not care what anybody says about me, because you know, I'm old enough, and I know I'm comfortable in my own shoes.
Yeah.
But I think some of these other people, you can sense there is conflict, you know, I just hope, I wish them all the best, really, and I hope, you know, they get a good, happy work-life balance. I mean, when I look at social media, and I've tried it, it's like, you know, I already come home and I work hard, right? So I might be preparing, planning cases, or I might be, you know, doing my paperwork or whatever, or preparing a presentation or writing an article or something like that, and I'm usually going to bed about 1 o'clock in the morning. Right, I don't want to be on social media, you know, finding work and trying to contact, talking to people. It just seems like so much extra work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Or maybe I've not figured it out, and it's definitely not the way I'm going to go at all.
No, and that's, like you said, that's completely okay. And yeah, like I think you're right to have your questions, definitely. And like you said, just do what, I think it's just important to do what you think works as a dentist. And like you said, if you think, right, this is going to be disruptive, I'm going to be up till God knows what time in the morning, trying to reply to these messages, trying to put out some good content. And then, you know, you're, like you said, it can have a detrimental impact on your mental health, and if you're going to get too caught up in it, which is really, really easily done, then there's absolutely nothing wrong with taking a step back and not embracing that side of the profession, I think. Yeah.
You know, because a lockdown made me realize, you know, I don't need to use this stuff, you know, and I used it less and less, and it was really good, because you then, you know, I had time to play battleships, you know, and all this sort of stuff, and jigsaw puzzles, and just enjoying myself. And actually, what I loved about lockdown is, you know, the weather was amazing, and you'd be sitting outside, and you could just hear the birds singing, and it was just so beautiful, you know. You thought, God, we live in such a beautiful part of the world.
Yeah.
And I think we should appreciate that, really. So, but now we've gone back to the rat race again. It was like, oh, again, I need my patients to come in, you know, I don't know.
No, I know what you mean. I think it's a good way to look at it is, obviously, it's a very sad time as well, but I mean, take some moments from it. And if that's sitting in the garden, enjoying the sun on a day where ordinarily you'd be, you know, seeing however many patients, then great. You know, you've got to take the good things out of it, for sure.
Exactly.
So you're speaking at the online dentistry show.
Yes, I am.
Which is slowly creeping up on us now. I have no idea where this month's gone. What are you going to be talking about? What can people expect from?
Oral B have invited me to lecture for the event, and you know, I'm very loyal to them, and they've always supported me for like 10, 12 years, and so. I'm going to lecture about how to treat periodontal patients within post COVID, really, and I'm going to talk about how, you know, what kind of ways we can use new technologies to make our patients more motivated, which I think is really good. So one thing Oral B did last November, December, they invited me to use their new Oral B IO toothbrush, right? And they gave me 10 toothbrushes. So there's only 30 that was given out in the whole world. 10 was to a professor in Italy, 10 was to a professor in the US, and then there was 10 to me in Burma. So that's what they talk about.
I was not expecting you to just pull that into the screen then. That was a nice surprise. And how do you find it? Are you a big fan?
No, so we did this really great study, right? So it was really good. So they gave us these prototypes, right? And it was, the battery only lasts for a week. So I had to choose 10 patients. So I, you know, chose patients who deserved it, because they were going to get given this toothbrush. And the toothbrush is quite a significant investment, and it's pretty good. So I chose 10 patients, and they came in, and they filled in a questionnaire, and I gave them the toothbrush. And then they had to bring it back a week later. And they did not want to give it back. That was just, that said it all, because they said they've never had their teeth feel so clean. And it's amazing. If you can get one.
I've got one myself. I'm a big fan. I live with my sister, and I come in the evening to use it, and she's always the first one in. I'm like, she was the first one to use it, in fact. I brought it home. I went out for a run, and I came back, and she was using it. And I was like, hang on a minute. This is back. But yeah, I get why they were reluctant to give that back.
And it was so good. So then we gave them they took their old one back, and then they used it, and they came back to fill in the questionnaire, and they were just saying, I want it back. So they've been waiting for it. So this is one of theirs, right? So I'm going to give them, all 10 have arrived last week, and I'm going to give them to my patients, right? And then I went to lecture in Frankfurt in just before lockdown. End of March, beginning of February, end of February, beginning of March. Mm-hmm. And it was really good, because you go in the hotel, they had all these academics from all over the world coming to this, and I was lecturing at that thing, and they had the toothbrush in the hotel. We all used it.
Yeah.
And I just forgot how good it was. And the next day, they took them back, and there was like a proper Barney going, excuse me, these are ours. No, these are just prototypes. We're going to get you on. So I'm not exaggerating. This thing is the best thing on the market, and you know that. Okay, it is a big investment, but it's going to destroy everything out there without a hesitation. You know, I know other companies are not going to like that, but this is really good. I mean, even now I'm licking my teeth. was really good.
So is this, this is your go-to now? This is morning, evening? This is
I doubt. I'm already, you know, advising it to my new patients. They're like, right, I'll buy it, you know? So it's great. And I try to be helpful. So I always try to find it on Amazon for them or whatever, find the best price, and then I get to take a photo on their phone. So it is good. But so I'm going to be talking about that and about how, you know, if you've got the right tools, you can motivate your patient to do what you've been trying to get them to do. And it and everything in dentistry, I know it's all about cosmetics and whatever, but in reality, if you have a good foundation, good oral hygiene, all the veneers or composite veneers that have been put in or implants will last for many more years. And so I'm going to be talking about that. And we're going to be talking about, you know, you can use ultrasonics or you can't use ultrasonics, you know, because of COVID and aerosols. So talking about hand instrumentation and stuff like that.
Okay, nice. So all sort of just sort of coping with, so periodontics in a sort of post-COVID world and how you sort of keep your patients encouraged to keep their mouths clean, essentially.
Yeah, and you know what's been really good? So I've seen some of my patients who need periodontal reassessment, and I've not done any ultrasonics on them because, you know, you have to plan and stuff, but they've come in because they want to know if everything's all right. And what's been great is, so 6 months or whenever I did the treatment, and you know, they're just maintaining such a high standard of oral hygiene. And I think if you've got the right kind of patient who understands the message, then you know, you're sorted and my job is easy. And then they come in for a review in the future and I'll charge them. Right now I'm not charging for just a chat. And it's just easy because we're having a conversation, having a laugh. That's what I love about my job, really. It's I suppose I get to choose my patient, or my patients choose me because they know I'm quite laid back or I'm not taking it so seriously. Mm-hmm. The hardworking patient, the patients who cause me hard work are the ones that don't come to see me.
Okay.
Which is so much better.
Doesn't surprise me.
Because we'll never get on.
Exactly. And I think communication is, you know, number one, I think, when in dentistry, if you sort of trust each other and you get along and you can communicate why it's important that they do something in a certain way, then, like you said, it's a
mutual relationship.
Yeah, mutual relationship. Let's go with that. I was going for something way too over the top there. but it makes both your job easier and their lives better. So, yeah.
You know, I always sort of say, listen, I only do 70% of the work, and I always exaggerate. This is what I do. No, I'm sorry. I do 30% of the work and they do 70, right? And so I keep throwing the ball back in the court. So I say, listen, you know, if you can't help me, I can't help you. So, and that's the way it is. And then I say, if you don't ever come back to see me, that's cool as well, because I've done my bit and they always come back.
But that's great. That's exactly what you want them to do. So that's important.
They're thinking, why is he not asking me to come back? Yeah, it's up to you. I'm not fussed.
That's just classic. Just if you tell people, if you're like, yeah, don't bother coming back, people are like, oh God, I need to actually make an effort.
But if I had a Jedi mind trick, I'd be even better.
Exactly. It's all about, it's definitely a psychology element to it, I think.
Yeah, completely. It is. It has changed. You know, the whole, you know, because there's like NLP, I don't really understand that. But I think at dental school, we've been taught to, so for example, you know, you're just taught to answer a question really quickly. So, you know, oh, you've got caries. So patient comes in and says, I've got toothache. Well, you've got pulpitis. The patient does not want to know that, right? They want to know, you know, they want to know that, are you going to listen to their problems? It's all a matter of saying, well, you know, Gabby, you've said to me you've got some toothache, and when you go out, you struggle to eat ice cream, all this sort of stuff. So you just sort of tell them the story back, right? And then you're always going to go, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then you build that rapport. And I think as students, we've not been taught that. We've been told just to answer a question quickly. And then how are you going to build that relationship, you know, with the patient? And that's taken me years to learn because I was not that way orientated.
Yeah. No, if you haven't been taught it, then that's, why would you be?
Yeah, and it's cool because a lot of my patients will come back and invest a significant amount of money because they like you and they trust you. And more than that, they trust the team in the practice, really. So it is, I mean, I've got, I don't know, I'm 48 now, and I don't know, might be working to 65, maybe longer, who knows. Yeah. So, going back to social media, all these things, I don't think I need to do that sort of stuff because hopefully my network of dentists will still refer to me in due course once they are happy and comfortable with the way things are going.
Yeah.
But that makes sense.
That does make sense. Outside of dentistry, I mean, people, you do, like you said, you did some webinars over lockdown. People know you. But what is there something that people might not know about you that you like to do outside of dentistry?
I love doing origami.
Oh,
I've been doing that since, I know.
Well, as in, like, you're good at it? You can...
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah. So I started at university because I was bored and I thought, well, I'd sit on a bus and I'd get a bus ticket and let's see what I can do with the bus ticket. So I bought these books. I've got these books from, you know, origami to Zen, and there's some really cool stuff you can make, really cool stuff. But it takes hours to do. And I loved it. And it would maybe it's like a form of meditation or whatever, and it would just relax you and stuff. So it was good. I like doing that. A lot, and then I'm also scared of heights, is the other thing.
Oh, okay.
So for me to get over my fear of heights, once I qualified in 97, I went to the US to learn to skydive.
That is a way to get over a fear of heights.
The thing is, I'm still terrified of heights because what I really want to do, and I've always wanted to do it, uh-huh, because I'm scared of heights, uh-huh, it's like I want to jump off stuff, you know, because it's like, oh, this is this, you know. So I want to be a base jumper.
Oh my, really. That I want to is jump probably the most dramatic way to get over your fear of heights, and dangerous as well. Have you, so that's, you actually, that's something you're going to do at some point?
Oh, yeah, definitely, without a doubt. Now that I've got, now that I have a bit more money, I can definitely work towards that. But we were going to be wearing a wingsuit, so we're going to, a friend of mine, Bill Schaefer and I have been skydiving lately a lot. He's not going to be base jumping, but we are going to learn to wingsuit train so we can fly around the sky like birds and do all this kind of cool stuff. Uh-huh. And then the plan for me is to jump off a cliff and see what I can do. And that will be the next step for me, yeah. But I have to learn to land properly because when I get scared of heights, it's about 30 feet from 15,000 feet. It's not a problem.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's not an issue. It's when I start seeing the ground coming up.
So if you're on an aeroplane, you're fine.
Yeah, I don't even think about it. It looks like a map.
Right. You see? Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
It does. It's. You see, the only thing is when you're jumping out of that, when you first start, you're thinking, jumping out of the plane, thinking this is just not natural. But it's not the height business. It's just like, I'm not supposed to leave the plane. Then when the parachute opens, the fun begins as well. And then when I'm about 30, 40 feet, that's when I'm thinking, oh, this is a bit scary. So last year, Bill and I got back into the sport. I've got about 300 jumps. He's got just a little bit less than me. And we had so many crash landings last year. And to the point where my third one was so bad, I was terrified. And I thought, I'm not getting on the fourth plane because I'm going to break a leg or something bad. So, and everybody says, that's very sensible. You seem to know you're going to hurt yourself. But the next day I did some jumps and it was all fine.
It was just a bad day, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is, exactly, yeah. And the thing is also, our canopy's coming at about 25, 30 miles an hour, so you have to come in, you're coming in relatively fast, and then you're trying to slow it down to walk it off.
Sort of run, is it sort of running and onto the ground? I don't actually know.
Sort of. So what happens is that this canopy is, it's like an aerofoil, uh-huh, right? And it collects, it's ram air canopy, so it collects air, and as soon as you pull the tails as these lines, and then it sort of starts collapsing a little bit and it slows you down, so you go from 30 to like about 5 miles an hour, okay, very very quickly.
Okay.
And you just sort of you step it off.
Yeah,
you can run it off or you can just skip.
I went paragliding last year for the first time, so I'm not a massive fan of heights myself, but I just thought I'm just gonna have to do it because if I don't do it now, I'm never going to do it, so I just didn't think about it. And it was in Argentina, and obviously I had a guy on my back. I was attached to the guy who knew what he was doing, and he didn't tell me how to land. So he hadn't really told me when we were going to go off either. The way he was telling me, basically, you know, run off a cliff. He was just kicking dust into the wind and just waiting for the wind to move it to the point where he's like, right, now we go. So I was like, great, this is so rogue and I'm definitely going to die. Like, this just didn't seem right to me. Anyway, it was really fun. I had a great time. And then I was like, hang on, I've got to now land. And a bit like what you just said, the ground was coming. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Anyway, he was like, start running now. And I was like, oh, okay. So I ran. And impressively, I actually managed to...
Only feet.
Yeah. I did. My friend didn't. He was short. She completely messed it up. But he just told me last minute, you know, run. So I was wondering if that was a sort of a similar thing when you're skydiving, but it's not.
So I think if you're carrying two people, then you will have to run it off. Okay. But if it's one person, you can easily just slow it down. Okay. And you know, the paragliding, it's amazing because what they can do with that is they can deflate one wing and it will just collapse and fly around and it'll inflate the other one. It's amazing what they can do. And so, I mean, the skydiving is really good fun. But then under the canopy, you can just throw it around. I mean, and have fun. And Bill and I, last two weekends ago, we went and had some canopy lessons. And now my confidence is much, much better. And I know I can do things to the canopy and it won't, you know, it'll always inflate if I do the right thing. So it's good. So
oh, cool. That's really good.
I really enjoy it. It's fun, but I'm still terrified of heights.
I think at least you're making an effort to try to overcome it, and you're having fun whilst you're doing it. That's important.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's all good. Thank you very much for chatting to me today. I'll see you at the online show in September.
Yes.
See you then.